Technology is not our friend, I will tell you. Okay. This passage from Romans has always tickled me. I don't know whether Paul was laughing to himself when he wrote it, because Paul is uncharacteristically most whimsical when he was saying, well, I'm a Pharisaic Jew or a former Pharisaic Jew, and I'm sent to the Gentiles, the non-Jews, to bring them into the kingdom. So when he says, well, I'm going to preach to you Gentiles, and the Jews, when they see you coming into the kingdom, are going to be jealous, and so they're going to run in after you. Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what was in his head. It sounds kind of goofy to me, but there you have it. One of the absolute primary things about reading the Gospels is to realize that they were written at a specific time, specific place, by a specific person, for a specific purpose. These guys did not sit down and think, I'm going to write the New Testament. No, they're just doing a kind of occasional piece, you know. And this passage from Matthew is absolutely vintage Matthew. It lays out his whole program. Again, as I said over and over again, one of the major problems, and this is up, he's probably written around 85, so even at that stage, after the destruction of Jerusalem and the dispersal of Jews all over the ancient world, there is still this massive argument going on. Who is a real Jew? Who is really faithful to the God of the covenant? And so, the Matthean Jesus precisely was created to answer that question. Who is a real Jew? Who is a really faithful Jew? So this, as I said, this is vintage Matthew. He said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. The other Gospels have Jesus not wandering all over, but certainly leaving Palestine and doing stuff for people who are non-Jews. But the Matthean Jesus said, no, no, no. It's only we Jews who are the agents of the mystery of God's dispensation, and we're going to take care of everybody, and blah, 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 blah. So when this lady, this pagan lady, a Canaanite, comes up and says, well, my kid is sick, Jesus characteristically says, no, I've sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Okay? But then notice, he changes his mind. He changes his tune. Your faith has saved you. Your faith has made you whole. And that's the pivotal thing. Do you believe that I represent what God intended for us human beings to be? And clearly she did. So that's the pivotal issue, not whether you're circumcised or whether you keep kosher or whatever, all the great, you know, accoutrements of being a Jew in those days, which Paul, of course, argued for a good part of his life, that he didn't circumcise Timothy, for example, one of his disciples. Yet circumcision was one of the absolute hallmarks of being a Jewish male. That was the outward sign of your belonging to the covenant, you know? You were circumcised, and therefore, necessarily, you had to be circumcised. Paul said, no, that doesn't count anymore. You know, Jesus has superseded that. And then you maybe remember all those arguments about food. Can I eat food that comes from the temple? Because all the meat in those days was basically brought in from these pagan temples and sold in the marketplace. You know? They were the butchers of their day. And Paul said, no, 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 no. But then in typically pastoral fashion, said, but if it's going to bother these Jews, then don't eat the bloody stuff, you know. If it's going to put obstacles in people's way, don't eat it. But it's this radical openness that's pivotal here. So that everybody, is welcome. And Matthew does this very consciously. The whole gospel is, I've sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then, at the very end of the gospel, you have the risen Jesus saying, now go and preach to everybody. Everybody. mainly the result of Jesus' life and dying and being raised, was the opening of the kingdom to all humanity. And that's really important. You guys are all too young to remember the Roman church of 50, 60 years ago, which is effectively a closed shop. You did not go into a Protestant church because you're going to go to hell if you did. I'm serious. That was exactly what we were taught. You were not, as one interpolated line in one of the Pauline letters, said, be not yoked with unbelievers. Paul didn't write that. That was written by one of his secretaries who was getting nervous about Paul's generosity. So, historically, it's essential that we realize all this stuff when we read these texts. And, of course, they were canonized a couple hundred years later, introduced into the Bible, because a whole bunch of people saw this as being perennially useful information. This radical openness to everybody. And it's still true for us, I think. It is still true for us. Again, that great line from, of all people, James Joyce, former Catholic, you know, wild-eyed maniac man. He said the definition of the Catholics is, here comes everybody. You know? That's a wonderful line, I think. And it stands in judgment of much of our behavior, it seems to me. I mean, when we look at what's going on between the Jews in Palestine and the Arabs in the Gaza, that shouldn't upset us. It should upset us, but for the right reason, namely that we recognize in ourselves the same errors that we have made in the past. The history of the church can be read as a series of foreclosures. Read the history of the Crusades. They're ghastly. They killed all kinds of Christians just because they had dark skin and were wearing turbans instead of, you know, whatever people were running around in Europe looking like. But that's all. Murdered people, all kinds of people, skewered their babies under a sword and roasted them. And it would be nice, I think, if that were all part of history, part of our dead past, but it's not. It is not, I don't think. I don't believe, certainly the church I grew up in, the church I was trained to serve in the seminary, was not an open church. It was very much an exclusive club, a salvation club. You know, nobody here but us saved people. You know, too bad for the rest of you. You're all hell-bent. And even as recently as Benedict XVI, in that notorious talk he gave at the University of Regensburg about wherever Islam is fine, there's murderous lying, blah, 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 blah. It's a totally gratuitous introduction of this nutty thing from some 13th century goofy Christian who just wanted to condemn Muslims all over the place. And then he goes on. I mean, he just threw that in. I mean, if you read that talk, it's fascinating. It doesn't belong anyplace. It just gratuitously appears in his text. But then he goes on to say, and I believe, this is not papal infallibility, believe me, I believe that the dispersal of the Christian message in the Greek civilization, so we can get St. Aristotle to pray for us, you know, is also nuts. But he really believed that. I'm sure he believes it to this day. So what if this had grown up in Korea or Africa, you know, or present Bogota, Colombia? Would the church look the way it did? No. And on the contrary, we have all these counterexamples of these terrible mistakes in the 16th century with the missions to the court of the Chinese emperor under Matteo Ricci. You know. He was loved by the emperor because he was a good mathematician, and the Chinese loved math. You know. And then word got back to Rome that he was translating some of the terms that we use into Chinese. And you can't, languages are not interchangeable. They're not like a set of clothes that you can take on and put off. I mean, they all bespeak a kind of cultural worldview. But, oh my God, no, they're not talking about transubstantiation in Chinese. They're talking about something else. Well, and then he shut it down. Same thing happened in India, you know, with Robert Nonnulli, another Jesuit. In other words, we keep drawing the lines too narrowly. That's the point I'm trying to make. We want so much to be exclusive, which is all seems to me perfectly self-serving. You know, we want to be in charge. We want to be the heroes of the play. We want to be the central figures. God is supposed to be the central figure. And as this passage from Isaiah puts it, all people, my temple will be a house of prayer for everybody, everywhere. This is 6 centuries before Jesus. You know. Because those guys knew, Isaiah at least knew, what God was about. And then issuing an invitation to everybody. So we who, you know, who so readily erect barriers between ourselves and others on all kinds of fatuous reasons, the way you look, the way you talk, your economic status, your academic status, you know. It's all rubbish. It's all rubbish. God sees the hearts. God is not put off by some linguistic inflection of one kind or another, or costume. So this is, you know, this is why God loved them. They canonized Matthew. Because that's not a dead issue. You know, I don't think, at least not in my experience. You told the line, you know. You obey the law. And often not the law is nothing but a series of barriers to people of goodwill. So listen to the Gospel of Matthew, if I hope. If not new ears, then revised ears, to see that what Matthew is trying to do is to broaden the scope of God's salvific action in the world. God who invites everybody, everybody, no matter how we are put off by skin color or language or customs or whatever. It doesn't make any difference.